Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line is Professor Adrian Puren, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. A very, very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us once again. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm awake, I think.
Well, if you weren't, you will be now. But I'm very disturbed about this news. I'm very disturbed about this news about balding and severe COVID-19. Is this something I need to panic about? Because I feel it is.
I think I suppose association is not necessarily causation. I suspect it's one of those.
Right. I would have imagined that as well, especially considering that if there's an age factor, there's all sorts of things. Anyway,
yes, of course.
Those are the articles that tend to make me certainly a little bit more hysterical about this whole thing. Let's just talk India for a moment, because obviously the numbers coming out of India, this talk of a double mutation. I spoke yesterday to Dr. Anton Marburg, and he said, look, the Brazilian variation is actually, might even be worse, but for whatever reason, there is, possibly because of the numbers, tremendous amount of fear around the Indian variant. Can you take us through your understanding of this?
Yes, so as you know, the virus continuously mutates. And so we do have multiple variants, and I think it's really what we call variants of interest, as WHO calls it sometimes, or variants of concern. And those are the variants where you have specific mutations in the genome that may well have certain specific effects in terms of, for example, higher degrees of transmissibility or immune evasion. And normally these mutations are in combination with a series of other mutations. So I know that very often the common term that is sometimes used is the so-called double mutant, but that's not really the correct technical term. Mm. This means that though there are two mutations specifically that are thought to be associated with a high degree of transmissibility and immune evasion. So the variant that is really dominant in South Africa has mutations that are thought to be associated with a high degree of transmissibility as well as immune evasion. And that's the reason why we stopped the AstraZeneca, for example, the rollout of that particular vaccine. And in the UK, the variant that was identified there, certainly the dominant variant was the variant that was associated with a high degree of transmissibility. But what's happened in the UK, for example, is that the variant originally identified in India has now become one of the dominant variants in circulation. So I think the concern is, if these variants become dominant, what are the implications with regard to managing the epidemic? What are the implications around immune evasion and the vaccine rollout? So those are the primary concerns. Mm. But the other point is, of course, that these variants are now in wide circulation, for example, both the one that was originally derived from India, South Africa, Brazil, and the UK are really in wide circulation as well, yes.
So the question is this, is the Indian, I know that, as you've mentioned, this double mutation, which is not strictly speaking correct, but does somehow manage to instill fear in us. Is this particularly worse, or is it just simply the fact that the numbers in India, the overcrowding, the religious services, the political gatherings, all of that, the lack of medical facilities, all of that has contributed to it, resulting in what is now officially 4,000 deaths a day, or is it actually the nature of the variant that is problematic?
Yes, I think it's probably a combination. As you know, in South Africa, we've just really essentially come out of our second wave, and when you look back, it's really those associations of the very things that you've said which becomes magnified. Here you have a variant that is likely to be more highly transmissible. However, you have a large population where you have large events such as religious or political events, super spreader events, as they are sometimes called, as well as facilities not being ready in terms of hospital bed availability, oxygen, and those types of things. And that really makes it a toxic milieu of those poor outcomes that we're currently seeing. And we saw this in Brazil as well, and the UK, where we have this combination of a virus that is likely to be more highly transmissible, may evade immune responses, and in that combination with facilities that are strained, you really have poor outcomes.
Do you think that we should be becoming a lot stricter around, or, and would you recommend the temporary closure of borders or travel between some of the countries where these variants are found and are active?
I think it's a very difficult one, you know, given that the variant is already in wide circulation. So I think it's really around how do you manage travel into a country? You know, again, do you try and focus only on the essential travel rather than tourist travel? Can you control at the ports of entry, for example, and can you be able to manage, one can manage, for example, quarantine or isolation and testing? So those are probably going to be the key things around access or entry into the country. But the variants are now here from originally, you know, from the UK or India, but we don't know really whether that is always the case. When you think of the variant that was originally identified in the UK, we now have it in the Western Cape, for example, in terms of the community. So I think we have to focus at that level as well. So I know that the vaccine rollout, you know, has to really be expanded. And I think that's part of our approach is really to try and rapidly expand our vaccine program to try and mitigate that. But it still comes back, but it comes back to the point that we really need to emphasize our ability to, once we have identified cases, to have a good tracing, tracking, isolation, quarantine processes in place to really try and limit the spread of those particular variants.
How are we doing with our tracking and tracing? Because I know I had the app and I was never really alerted to anything. It might be that I don't go many places, but I wasn't alerted, whereas a friend of mine was getting alerts every 15 minutes and it just put him into a complete hysterical state, which of course I didn't help to discourage. But I just wonder how effective it's been and how much information as the NICD you've managed to glean from it, because I mean that data could be so incredibly valuable to you in terms of working out the behavior of the virus.
Yes, so unfortunately I've not had sight of that type of information. I know it's an ongoing because I think it's a really complex issue, especially I suppose when you have large or community spread as well. You know, your numbers become so large that the human resources required, you know, to do all the tracing and tracking and isolation really just becomes very, very difficult to achieve. So I think it's really under these circumstances where you have the lower numbers, which we currently are having, but as you can see that we're starting to have an increase in the numbers. But it's where we have the lower numbers where I think that tracking and isolation becomes important. And in these instances where we have identified individuals with the new variants that we should try track and trace, especially as there is some information, at least around the variant that was identified in the UK, that there is good evidence that there's higher degrees of transmissibility.
We've certainly seen that.
Whereas in India, it's a bit of a mix. We're not clear. Yeah. So at
this stage, there is no support for temporarily shutting down travel between countries as they've done in other parts of the world.
Yes, I think that's still under discussion and debate. I understood from the Minister of Health's comment that it still needs to reach the cabinet level to make some decisions. So, as you know, there is what is called advisory committees the Department of Health, and they would obviously go through trying to put together the science, but obviously the Department of Health has to look at other particular aspects, such as how will it affect the economy of the country and so forth. Mm. So in that sense, they probably will come up with some statement. But I know that there is testing at the ports of entry.
Right.
So that's one way in which there's some level of control. or access.
Do you think we're agile enough in terms of how we're making decisions around this? I know we've got the most incredible people, and I really am very proud of what we have here in terms of qualifications and expertise. But are we able to make the decisions quickly enough?
I think it is. I think it is there. It's not. I think it's really trying to make sure that the science is right as well. Mm. I think that does influence that, and I think. You know, South Africa has tried to put, for example, in place networks to make sure that we're able to, once cases have been identified or clusters have been identified, to be able to prioritize those particular patients, those particular specimens, to do the sequencing. And the sequencing doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily a fast process. We try and make it as rapid as possible and then come up with confirmation, because you don't want to make errors. You don't want to make false positive results available to the public. So, those sort of things are really critical in terms of the decision making. Yes.
Right, Professor Adrian Puren. Unfortunately, we need to leave it there. Professor Puren is the acting executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, talking to us about the variants, the travel policy, and how it some of the factors that need to be considered.